But this morning, we're thinking about mission, again, as Ken said a few moments ago. What it means to deliver, to share the good news of the gospel to those around and about us. And as we do that, we're going to look at how Paul did that. And in that reading that we just had from Acts 16, there were three separate instances of how Paul shared the good news. And we're going to think about those, what that meant for Paul, and then through that, what that means for us. And as we do that, I'll share some stories from around our association of how different churches are seeing God at work in this time. So we heard this account from the Apostle Paul. So we're thinking about how he shared the good news. The first of those is this meeting that Paul has with Lydia. Lydia was a prominent and wealthy businesswoman, someone who was searching, someone who was, we might say, spiritually open. And so we read in this account that Paul arrives in Philippi, and he and his companions, as was their custom, they go to try and find the synagogue so that they can worship with the Jews on the Sabbath. And they find out that there isn't a synagogue, but they hear of this group of women who are meeting by the riverbank to pray. And so they go and join them and pray with them. And whilst he is at this prayer meeting, if you like, he meets Lydia, this wealthy, well-respected businesswoman. And we read that she was a worshipper of God. And the implication of that is that she wasn't a Jew, but she was searching. She was looking for something spiritually. And then we read that as Paul shared with this group of women, that God opened her heart and she became a follower of Jesus. And she's immediately baptized along with her whole household. This is a picture of this riverbank. This is where this encounter took place. You see, it's a place of peace. It's a place of calm. And as we go through each of these three encounters, we will see that the physical place where they take place will show us something of what is going on. So how did Lydia encounter the good news? Quite simply, she realized that as Paul spoke, that what he was talking about was what she had been looking for. And she responds almost as if she says, "This is it. I've been looking for this for years, and now you're telling me what I need to do." One of the things that we are seeing across our association and across our nation at this time is that there is an increased sense of spiritual openness among people. There are stories of people just turning up to church and saying, "I don't know why I'm here, but I'm here." I don't know if you recognize this church. Anyone tell me where that is? That's Lyndhurst Baptist Church in the middle of the New Forest. And their custom is that when they're having a baptism service, they put a sign outside their church that says, "Baptism this Sunday, all welcome." And a while ago, the minister Paul did this, put the sign outside, and he got, I don't know if it was a phone call or an email, a couple of days later, a young man contacted him, and he said, "I drive past your church every day on the way to work." And he goes, "I've had this sense for a while now that I should be baptized. And I asked God for a sign. And then I drove past your church, and there was the sign." People are spiritually open in a way that we've not seen for years. And you may have seen something of this reported in the press. Various reports talking about this, a recognition that something has changed in our nation. Each year, all of our churches are asked to send in statistics to the Baptist Union so that as a national family, we can see something about what is going on in our family. For the last 2 years now, we've seen a significant increase in the number of baptisms across our family. In 2024, there were 800 more baptisms than there were in 2023. And then in 2025, I just have to think about the figures, there's lots of figures going on, there were 825 more baptisms than there were in 2024. God is doing something within our nation, but we're seeing that reflected in our Baptist family. 2025 was the first time across our nation for 20 years that there's been an increase in church membership in our churches. God is doing something. People are spiritually open in a way that we've not seen for a long time. So firstly, we have this prominent and wealthy businesswoman, someone who was searching spiritually and found what they were looking for as Paul spoke. Secondly, we have a young slave woman, a woman who was enslaved, afflicted by a demon, someone who was spiritually alive but against the work of Christ, someone who you could say was oppressed. If that last account was in the peace and tranquility of a riverbank, here we are in the hustle and the bustle and the busyness of a market square. This woman who was enslaved was in many ways the opposite of Lydia. She's got no power, no wealth, no freedom, either physically because she's enslaved, nor spiritually because she's afflicted by a demon. Each day as Paul and his companions return to the riverbank to pray, this girl shouts out at them. And then we read that after a number of days, Paul says, "This is enough. I've had enough of this." And we read, finally, Paul became so annoyed with her that he turned to her and said. One writer says, I love that. He says, that tells me that the Bible is true. Because if someone was making up this story, they would say that Paul turned to her and compassionately spoke to her. But no, what we have here, and he paraphrases this, was Paul was peeved. Paul had had enough and spoke to this woman. Paul eventually acted, even though he had other plans. Paul was on his way to pray, but he allowed his plans to be interrupted. He speaks to the demon. He commands the demon to go, and it goes. So how did this woman encounter the good news? She was set free from that thing that was oppressing her. Not going to look at this in detail, but just to say that spiritual forces are real. There are times when they can negatively hold an individual. There are times when we, as followers of Jesus, have the authority and the responsibility to speak in Jesus' name and to see people set free. This woman was afflicted by this spiritual force. But we know people that are afflicted in many other ways, whether that is spiritually, whether that is physically, whether that is emotionally. And very often, the first way in which they will encounter the good news of the gospel is in terms of them being set free from that thing that is holding them back. This can often be very practical. a couple of examples. North End Baptist Church in Portsmouth have a food pantry. And other examples that I could share of food banks and that work with people, providing people the food that they need. Other churches have warm spaces, although I do think maybe we should do something around cool spaces. I think some of our churches could work wonders there. But that opportunity for people to be able to gather together, to be known, to be loved, when in society often there is that epidemic, we might say, of loneliness, being able to provide those opportunities to support people. In our Ministers and Leaders Conference back in February, Steve Tinning, who works for the Baptist Union as the Public Issues Enabler, that's a very catchy title for a job description, but he helps our churches to engage with politics and engage and he engages with government on our behalf at times. And one of the things he said, and he spoke from this passage, and it was something that really struck me. He said that our churches are often very good at these things, at the food banks and at the warm spaces and the welcome. And he said he wanted to challenge us as an association, he wants to challenge us as churches to take that one step further. And yes, we carry on doing that. We carry on supporting those that are afflicted. But we need to do all that we can that challenges the system that means that people need food banks and that people need warm spaces. So yes, we need to keep on offering those places of welcome and hospitality, but also we need to be taking that one step further so that we get to that place and we pray for that place where food banks and warm spaces aren't needed, because society is fairer and more just. So firstly, we've got a prominent and wealthy businesswoman, someone who was searching spiritually and found what they were looking for as Paul spoke to them. Then we have a young enslaved woman who was afflicted by a demon, someone who was spiritually bound and was set free from the thing that was oppressing her. And then finally, we have the jailer. You might describe him as a hardened cynic with seemingly no interest in faith. So we've moved from the peace of a riverbank to the busyness of a market square, and we end up in the squalor of a prison cell. Jailers were often retired Roman soldiers who were rewarded with this job after an illustrious career. I picture him as a hardened, seen-it-all cynic. He was keen to do his job and to do his job well. And part of that job was to make the life of his prisoners, Paul and Silas in this case, as difficult and as painful as possible. But we read that Paul and Silas aren't intimidated. Rather, they pray and they sing hymns to God. They make that choice to worship in the midst of their suffering. There's a whole other sermon there. We won't go there this morning. But then we read that there's an earthquake and that they are set free from those things that were holding them back, those things that chained them physically and held them as prisoners. So as Paul and Silas are set free, the jailer fears the worst. He takes out his sword to kill himself. He would have been held responsible for any escapees. And so he decided to get it over sooner rather than later. And now confession time. I think if I'd been Paul, I'd have seen the jailer take out his sword and I might have let him get on with it. Because good riddance. Another one less Roman soldier in the world. The world will be a better place. That's my bad. But thankfully, Paul is more gracious than I am. And he calls out, don't harm yourself. We are all here. The jailer asks Paul, sirs, what must I do to be saved? And then Paul has the opportunity to share the good news with the jailer. And again, we read that he and his whole household are baptized. One author, J.D. Greer, writes, just picking up on this moment, that Paul stands with this freedom on his right. There's an open door where he can escape. And he pictures it as on his left, he's got this Roman soldier that has beaten him and tortured him the night before. And rather than taking his freedom, he turns back to the jailer. He says, can you see why that was so powerful? Why the jailer responded and said, what must I do to be saved? How did the jailer encounter the good news? In the actions of Paul and Silas, by not escaping. By acting in a way that was unexpected. And then that led for this opportunity for Paul and for Silas to speak to them and to share the good news of the gospel and see them come to faith. But there's also something here, I think, about the importance of speaking at the right time. Because if we think for a moment, if we go back to the evening before this happened, and Paul and Silas are chained up, and Paul says to the jailer, oh, jailer, just by the way, if you want to be saved, I don't think it would have had the same impact. If in that moment, after the earthquake, Paul and Silas are running out the door and say, oh, by the way, jailer, this is what you need to be saved. Again, I don't think it would have had the same impact. The words had the impact because they were followed, or they followed Paul and Silas acting in a way that was counter-cultural. They followed Paul and Silas acting in a way that meant that man's life was saved. So in this last scene, if you like, there are three aspects to it. One was that Paul and Silas acted in a way that wasn't expected. They showed this jailer kindness when that was the last thing that he would have thought was coming his way. They waited for the right time to speak, and then they shared the good news. So three people, male and female, rich and poor, old and young, educated and uneducated, powerful and weak, free and captive. Three people who in many ways encapsulate the whole of society. Three people who encounter the good news of the gospel in different ways. One encountering the good news through a conversation, realizing that what was being spoken about was the very thing that she'd been searching for years. One encountering the good news of the gospel by being set free from that thing that was oppressing her, that thing that was holding her back. And one encountering the good news of the gospel through the countercultural actions of two believers. I'd encourage you as individuals and as a church to reflect on what mission means to you. As a Baptist family, we're looking at this time. We're looking at what a Baptist understanding of mission might be. This is just a picture from the Baptist Together website. There are some resources there, and there's some proposed wording as to what a holistic understanding of mission might look like for us as a Baptist family. So maybe you'd like to look at that, and there were some resources to help you do that. But what does it mean for you as individuals, for you as a church, to join in the Missio Deo, as we heard earlier, to go on that mission, whether that is as a member of Paw Patrol or a member of the Mission Impossible team? What does it mean? We've had three pictures here from Paul. I'd like to say that it's all of those. It's not you choose one and that's what we're going to do. But it's about being responsive to what God is calling you to do. We need to be ready for those who are spiritually open. We need to be ready for those that might just walk through the door on a Sunday morning. They might need to be ready for those that maybe you just come across as friends or as family, that there is just that sense that at this time there is a greater spiritual openness. You need to be ready and willing to take that conversation a step further. We need to be looking to set free the oppressed, whatever that might mean for them. Whether that is coming alongside them as they struggle for food, whether that is joining up with others to offer a place of welcome and friendship, but also to look at challenging the system that means that people need that. And we need to be living lives in a way that cause people to ask questions, to say, why did you respond in that way when everyone else would have responded in this way? And then making the most of those opportunities to share the gospel. But at the heart of it, we need that openness and that sensitivity to God's Spirit to ask, as we encounter people, as we live our lives, to say, what are you saying to me in this moment? Lord, how do you want me to respond to this person, to this individual, to this opportunity?